Morning. The House Special Committee on Fisheries will come to order. The time is 10:03 on Tuesday, April 23rd. Members present, Representative Vance, Representative Tarr, Representative Christ Tompkins, and myself, Chair Stutes. Friendly reminder, please silence your cell phones. And we're asking that you don't approach the committee desk if you have an issue or you'd like to be in touch with one of the committee members. If you'd get the attention of my committee aide, Matt Greening, he'd be happy to help you. I'd like to thank Selmond Holland, our committee secretary, and Tom Raymond from the Juno LIO for technical and teleconferencing support. I know we all have a busy schedule this week, so we're going to get started. At our first order of business today, we will be hearing House Bill 116, Aquatic Farm and Hatchery Site Leases by Representative Story. Today we'll be hearing public testimony on the bill, holding committee discussion, and setting it aside for further review. Here to present the bill, we have Representative Story with her backup from her staff, Greg Smith. So if you would come forward, have a seat, present yourself and your affiliation for the record, and begin.
Yes, Representative Andy Story. Chair Stutes and members of the House Fisheries Committee, thank you for hearing House Bill 116, a bill that would simplify the Department of Natural Resources lease renewal process for aquatic farms that grow things such as oysters, kelp, and other shellfish. If enacted, House Bill 116 would help small Alaska-based aquatic culture businesses succeed by reducing administrative burdens and expediting the lease renewal process. Aquaculture is an industry with a lot of promise, and Alaska, with more coastline than all the other states combined, has bountiful potential as a site for aquatic farms of oysters, kelp, and other shellfish. The Alaska Mariculture Task Force set a goal of making this a $100 million industry in the next 20 years. As you can see from the flow chart in your bill packet, the requirements to permit and receive regulatory approval to operate an aquatic farm or related hatchery is complex. The most rigorous and time-consuming portion of the approval process is the DNR aquatic farming site lease, both the original lease and the lease renewal. Because of the recent increase in the number of aquaculture farm lease applications, there was one application for a new aquatic farm in 2016, 17 applications in 2017, and 16 in 2018. Coupled with recent cuts to agency staff, it now takes on average of 18 months or more to approve an aquatic farm lease. By simplifying the renewal process for aquatic farm leases, we can reduce the burden on division staff, allowing them more time to focus on new lease applications. Currently, an aquatic farm lease renewal must undergo the same lengthy approval process similar to an original lease. This is not required of numerous other DNR lease types. House Bill 116 would align the lease renewal process for aquatic farms to the lease renewal process for other DNR leases. This change would significantly shorten the first renewal process while still allowing appropriate regulatory oversight, public engagement, and appeal of any DNR lease decision. I would like to mention that this bill will not affect leases for salmon hatcheries. As a new legislator, I am pleased with how this bill began and how it was developed. Shortly after taking office, I was contacted by a constituent who is currently in the process of transferring an aquatic farm lease, a process that would not be affected by this bill. They shared their experience with the lease transfer process and suggested a few possible changes that might help applicants. After subsequent conversations with DNR, DNR staff mentioned the streamlining of the aquatic farm renewal process as a way to reduce regulatory burden on applicants while also reducing workload on an understaffed state agency. Thank you for your time in hearing this important legislation. I and my staff, Greg Smith, welcome any questions from the committee. And if the committee wishes, Mr. Smith could walk through the four proposed changes to the statute included in the bill.
Thank you. And I'd like to recognize Representative Edgman. Before we start that, could you please tell us what the difference is of the changes between the root version of this bill and the sponsor substitute before us?
The sponsor substitute is just in the title. In talking with people about it, we wanted to make clear that it make it very clear what it affected and that it did not affect salmon hatcheries. When we said hatcheries and not being more aquaculture, people were wondering about that.
Thank you. Do we have questions? Representative Vance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have one question of clarification, and that is in here it says that for an initial lease there will be time for public comment and testimony. Is that still open for a renewal? Will the public be able to weigh in during the renewal process?
Yes, that is allowed. I don't know, Mr. Smith, if you wanted to elaborate on that.
Greg Smith, staff to Representative Story. Representative Vance to the chair. There is still public notice, public appeal, during the renewal process. And if someone is, my understanding, I believe we have DNR on the line and they can speak a little bit more to it if the committee desires, that if someone is personally affected, there is a chance for them to reach out to the director and the commissioner to request a review or an appeal of the decision.
Thank you.
Online we have Christy Collis, the leasing unit manager for the South Central Regional Land Office of DNR. We also have Lorraine Versesi, program director for the Commercial Fisheries Division of the Department of Fish and Game, and Alpheus Bullard, the drafter of the bill. So if you have any questions, Okay, seeing none, and we thank you for your presentation. Representative Christ Tompkins.
Madam Chair, I thought I heard the sponsor say this, but if could go through what the sort of bill does or the mechanics of the bill.
Yeah. And again, Greg Smith, staff to Representative Story. In the first section, it adds 30AS3505083, which is the section of law related specifically to aquaculture, farm, and related hatchery leases, to AS3505070E, which is the subsection empowering the director to renew a lease under this section. And that's added in line 6. In section 2 of the bill, it is removing the words or renew from two different spots. And what that does is then those sections are just focused on the requirements for a new lease application. Section 3 is again doing the same, removing the renewal process from 3805083B, and then in section 4 it's explicitly stating that the commissioner may, under the 070 renewal section, extend or renew a lease under this section, which in 083 is the aquaculture, farm, and related hatchery section.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
May I?
Of course. Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Smith. And I'm reading AFDF's letter of support, and it says HB 116 will allow for one renewal of a farm site through a simpler internal process, which does not require public comment. Is that basically what this bill does?
Yes, it aligns the renewal process for an aquatic farm or related hatchery lease to the renewal process that DNR follows for many, many other types of leases they do. Hydroelectric facilities, fish processing docks, power lines, telecommunication sites, grazing, cabins, hunting and fishing lodges, all different kinds of uses. It's aligning essentially the renewal process.
Paula?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the next sentence after that in AFDF's letter of support says, however, the second renewal will still be required to go through the extended process similar to a new application. And is there a section of law that would provide for that sort of more exhaustive process with the second renewal that is not excerpted in House Bill 116?
Representative Christ-Tompkins to the chair. Yes, I believe in AS 38050570E, you can see the language, which is not being changed in the bill, on page 1, lines 7 through, or 8 through 8 and 9, and that's that the lease may be renewed only once. A lease may only be renewed once, and then, I guess, on the second attempt at a renewal, they would, again, have to go through the original lease application process. So the first time, I guess, is considerably more exhaustive, simplified, and this is for the general leases, not aquatic farms currently, but if the bill were to pass, an aquatic farm at the first for the original lease would have a more exhaustive process, less so on the renewal, but then after the end of the renewal, after a period of 20 years total, there would be again a very exhaustive process for the third period.
Madam Chair.
Follow up.
That's really helpful, and I'll read that section of statute just to get familiar. I mean, I guess this is sort of half a comment, but I I've even been in touch with the same constituent, Representative Story, who is in touch with you, but I've heard this all across Southeast that it is a royal headache getting these leases and trying to get a site up and running, even if you have the capital and the chutzpah to do it. And I'm so glad to see this bill coming forward. I guess my question is this enough? Are there other things we can be doing or should be doing to make this easier?
There's been some other suggestions, but we thought this was a good place to start.
Just from the committee, I there might be a real receptive audience to maybe even doing more if there are other sort of cut and dry changes we could add on to this. And I mean, I think I've got my differences with this governor, but I think there is probably alignment and streamlining things. Like, that's one area. So I'll just put my voice on the record that would love to do anything and everything we can to streamline things as much as possible.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Vance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just along that train of thought of, it seems like this is a regulatory issue that the department could do internally to reduce the regulation, but from what I'm understanding is that you are clearing up a statutory obligation that would clean up the process a little bit to allow them to get that renewal quicker, easier.
Through the chair. Yes, and we do have DNR staff on the line, and it was their through conversations, their suggestion that this was one thing we could do was simplify the renewal process for those exact reasons.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? I have a quick question, and I'm not sure that you're the right person that I should be asking, but from the inception, when you're going to have a shellfish farm, what's the time between your when you actually start and you're actually producing and generating revenue from that farm?
Thank you for that question. Well, 18 months is what the process has been taking, but I think there are a lot of people who have better answers to that because they've been living and breathing it. And so we do have several people on the line who could talk to that. Or Mr. Smith, do you have anything you want to add to that?
I think it may be better just to have the agency or DNR clarify.
Maybe the Alaska Mariculture Task Force, do you think?
It depends upon, are you talking about the original lease process?
I'm talking about from the time you decide you're going to have an aquatic farming of some sort of shellfish to the time where you're actually taking that product to market. So maybe, would it be maybe Julie Decker? Julie?
Yes, Chair Stutz, I'm online.
Good. Did you hear the question?
I sure did. Would you like me to address it?
Please.
So my name is Julie Decker, for the record. I'm chair of the Alaska Mariculture Task Force. As far as revenue being produced once a lease is issued, it can take anywhere from a year for the case of seaweed, which is an annual crop, to 7 or 8 years for a species such as gooey ducks, which is a longer-lived animal. For oysters, it's something more like 3 or 4 years. And that's before $1 is generated. I mean, the initial dollar, there's much investment, and it'll probably be take longer before you're actually in the black.
Wow. Okay, thank you. Are there other questions? Seeing none, then we will go to invited testimony first. So we have Meta Mesdang here. She is a board member from the Alaska Shellfish Growers Association, owner and owner of Salty Lady Seafood Company. If you would identify yourself and affiliation for the record, please.
Thank you, Chair Stutz. My name is Maida Mesdag, and I am the owner of Salty Lady Seafood Co., a small family farm here in Juneau, Alaska. I'm also on the board of the Alaska Shellfish Growers Association, and I can say on behalf of myself and the organization, we support HB 116. I have a farm site here in Juneau that we submitted a lease transfer last year for, and it has on its lease oysters, kelp, and gooey duck. We currently have oysters on our lease, and we're getting ready to seed gooey duck. And those oysters would take about 3 years to grow before they're ready for the market, and the gooey duck will take 7. Unfortunately, we only have 5 years left on our lease, so we won't actually see any revenue from our gooey duck sales before we have to go through the renewal process all over again. Like I mentioned, this is a very small family farm here in Juneau that intends on growing food for our community. So what we're looking at with HB 116 is a bill that would allow Alaska Department of Natural Resources to one time renew a lease so that people that are in good standing can have an opportunity to actually earn a revenue at their farm site, such as myself. And we want to see this bill go through, and it means a lot to not just myself and my family, but the other growers in the state. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Do we have questions? Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you. And I believe it was your husband who was the lobbyist, so to speak, that I spoke with on the subject. Thank you for being here and for what you're doing, being in the vanguard of mariculture in Alaska. My question is, are there things on your sort of statutory change wish list above and beyond what's presently encompassed in 116 that you encounter and it sort of leaves you scratching your head or feels sort of onerous or doesn't create value?
This was definitely a great place for us to start. One of the other changes that we have talked about is actually just regulatory, and that's changing the lease terms itself. To get that done was a bit more tedious, and so we took this approach first. Because it was a place to start that would alleviate some of the burden, not just on people looking to invest in the industry, but the agencies that have to regulate it. For them, it creates quite a lot of time and work. And during that period, we're not putting new businesses to work. We've got a lot of people lined up waiting to start who have the capital in line and the gumption to do this. But it's going to take them up to 2 years before they see their lease, and then they start the build out process. So it really takes people with vision. And I'm not exactly sure what other statutory changes could be made to help the process. I think there needs to be due process when we're talking about tideland leases, but I know that there's room for improvement, and I think DNR would be another great resource to look to find out ways that we could help them.
Thank you. Follow up?
Yeah. I mean, I'm realizing sort of regulatory changes are outside the scope of this bill. I mean, nonetheless, I think this committee is very sympathetic to the issue. I mean, what are those regulatory changes sort of on a high level?
It would be the duration of the lease terms. It would be changing it from a 10-year lease to match more of the other DNR leases, which are like 20 to 25 years on average for a tideland lease or a state or land leases. And so we would love to see some congruence in the way that those are handled with mariculture because of the length of time that it actually takes to have a marketable product and before farmers start seeing any revenue. We're not even just talking profit. We're talking making a dollar. It takes time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Vance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the developmental plan, it says the goal is to grow $100 million in mariculture industry in 20 years. And for the sake of the public, could you speak to how much we keep talking about capital. Can you just tell us what are actual dollar figures that it takes to start this type of venture and how much approximately per year a typical mariculture farmer, you know, invest to be able to do this? And like you said, many years are out, but how much is being expended per year just to get this going?
Welcome, Representative Newman.
Thank you. So what we're looking at for my family is a small farm. We've got a half acre of oysters and a half acre of geoduck, and we're going to be investing upwards of $150,000 with hopes that I will make somewhere around a $70,000 a year income working a full-time business with my kids. For our family, we wanted to provide our kids with an opportunity that's unique to Alaska where they could grow up as a part of a family business working outside. And so we are looking at more of the intrinsic value this provides our family. I can't speak to the capital investment of some of the larger farms. I think we might have some on the phone. But for us, for a small micro-scale family farm, we're not looking at making hundreds of thousands of dollars. I'm looking at making a livable wage that provides intrinsic value for my family that we think is worth the effort that we're putting into making this happen.
Follow up, Representative.
Yes, and it's obviously very labor intensive, and that's not just when you look at the wage per hour. That $70,000 isn't just your contribution, that's your entire family. And so when we think about the contribution that this is to Alaska, it is a really big deal. It is a family venture, and it just makes sense that whatever we can do to ease the regulatory and statutory burden to help continue your success would be great. I would like to say that I could claim that there are growers in my district, but they're in Kachemak Bay, and they happen to be in Representative Stutes across the water. They're so close to me, but we have some who will be greatly affected and probably relieved with this. I think this is something that we all see is very necessary. Thank you for your hard work in doing this, and we hope that this goal is reached very soon.
Thank you. Are there other questions? Seeing none, Ms. Mustang, thank you for your testimony. We appreciate it.
We appreciate you
taking your time coming in.
Yes, and thank you on behalf of the growers in the state and my family.
And next online we have, again, Ms. Julie Decker. She's the Executive Director of the Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation and a member of the Alaska Mariculture Task Force. Ms. Decker, if you please identify yourself and your affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you just perfectly.
Great. Thank you again. My name is Julie Decker. I am the Executive Director of the Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation and the current Chair of the Mariculture Task Force. I'll start out speaking from the point of view of AFDS and then also discuss a little bit from the point of view of the task force and our discussions of this concept. AFDS does support HB 116. Our membership is a broad spectrum of the seafood industry. We have harvesters, processors, and support sector businesses from across the state of Alaska on our board of directors. The organization was founded in 1978, and our mission is to identify opportunities common to the Alaska seafood industry and develop efficient, sustainable outcomes that provide benefits to the economy, environment, and communities. One of our recent areas of work is spearheading the Alaska Mariculture Initiative, and this grew into the Mariculture Task Force. I see that you have the briefing document for our comprehensive plan that was completed last year, the Alaska Mariculture Development Plan, with the goal to grow a $100 million industry in 20 years. One of the results of the task force and its work has been increased interest by the private sector in aquatic farming in Alaska, which is a good thing. But it has led to a backlog of lease applications with DNR, and this bill would help alleviate some of that backlog. As a task force at our last meeting, this bill wasn't written yet, but we did conceptually discuss what is contained in this bill, and we had thorough discussions with the Department of Natural Resources as well. And conceptually, the task force was in agreement with this bill as a piece of a broader solution to both reduce the backlog and help, as Meta Mezdag said, help focus on DNR's time on actually the new permits and getting those folks up and running and getting them through the process. Some of the other possible changes that we talked about at the task force with DNR and that you folks have asked about were the change to the lease term. So in other words, potentially changing it from 10-year lease term to 20-year lease term. And that is a regulatory change. And from my understanding, it could be done through regulations, but it also has broader impacts. And that's why we have not moved forward with that yet. We talked about potentially changing regulations to allow for either a 10 or a 20-year lease term, because once you go to a longer lease term, it automatically kicks in DNR's requirement for a site survey. And in some of these remote areas, surveys on water might be expensive, and it also slows down the process. So DNR kind of talked us through the complications and some of those other issues. So as Meta Mezdag talked about, we started with the easiest, most simple solutions first. So this bill is definitely that. It'll do a few positive things. It'll reduce the workload for DNR staff. It'll prioritize DNR staff time on the new farm lease applications, which will help grow the industry, and it'll give more certainty to farmers who have invested in site infrastructure for those first 10 years. I would also like to point out that DNR has many other leases that are from anywhere from 20 to 50 years in terms. So this is still a very conservative leasing program, and so we'd like to see you support this bill, and I'm open for any other questions.
Thank you. Do we have any questions from this committee? I have one. I'm looking at the Alaska Mariculture Task Force. Is Paula Kullenberg still involved in that?
Madam Chair, she is not. She has retired from Alaska Sea Grant. Heather Brandon, who is the new director of Alaska Sea Grant, is now on the Mariculture Task Force.
Yeah, I knew she had retired, and I didn't know if she maintained her affiliation or not. Okay, well, seeing no other questions from this committee, thank you. Thank you very much, Julie, for your testimony, and we appreciate you taking the time. And with that, I will open public testimony. And we do have some public testimony online. We have Margot Reveal in Homer. Margot?
Yes, Madam Chair. Margot and members of the committee, my name is Margot Reve. I am with the Alaska Shellfish Growers Association president. I think Meta spoke to most of our issues, but I just wanted to say that we are strongly in support of this. It's a modest bill that brings aquaculture lease process more into line with other leases. Here in Ketchmack Bay, there's 13 farms, including ours, so it ours is actually coming up for its second renewal because we bought an existing farm that had already been through the first renewal. So this would not directly impact us, except in that it might free up the staff time and allow us all to put more effort into building a stronger blue economy and achieving economic diversification for Alaska. So I would love to see the DNR putting more of their effort into running the program as well. And I'm available to answer any questions you have at any time. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any questions? Seeing none, thank you. We appreciate your testimony. Next, we have Tamsin Peoples in Kodiak.
Hello, my name is Tamsin Peoples. Thank you, Madam Chair. I am the Alaska Mariculture Manager for Blue Evolution. I'm calling to also voice our support for improving this entire permitting and leasing process. Over the past 4 years, Blue Evolution has worked directly and closely with independent farmers across the state of Alaska, pioneering and establishing commercial seaweed mariculture in a sustainable and responsible fashion. Over this time, we've experienced and witnessed firsthand the challenges and frustration of this entire permitting process and seen the direct impact that this glacial pace can have on an individual farm or the industry entirely. There's currently a huge amount of interest in the industry, and I've talked with a number of individuals who are prospective trout farmers, and the inability to bring farms online quickly is going to be a huge issue and may and most likely will hamstring further development and growth for the industry. So changing and improving this entire lease process is paramount for this industry to continue to grow, not just seaweed, but mariculture as a whole. And our hope is that this amendment will help lighten the load for Department of Natural Resources. However, we strongly urge this committee to consider the fact that farm size is not accounted for in this amendment. There have been multiple large 100-plus acre farms applied for and approved, some of which are scheduled to begin operation this fall. The impacts of these farms are not known. We can only assume that larger farms will have a larger impact on the environment, the ecosystem, communities, but we don't know to which degree. There's currently no additional regulations in place within the state of Alaska for these larger farms, and we believe that there's going to be a need for strong agency and public insight during the initial years of operation, including that initial renew process. We believe it's unfair and unwise to regulate farms the same regardless of the size of them. A single farmer with a half acre or a single acre of farm is going to be underneath the exact same regulation, cost, and leasing process as a huge corporate entity with many personnel and money at their disposal as a resource. We believe this is especially true given the current regulations that allow large leases to be held but only charged for the small percentage of the area of that farm that is currently being farmed. This is already being applied or being utilized by certain farmers across the state of Alaska. This, we believe, will undoubtedly lead to a land grab, which will inundate the Department of Natural Resources even further with more applications. Again, we're extremely glad to see that progress is being made and that these amendments are happening, but it's extremely obvious for anyone involved with the industry that more needs to be done to continue to develop this industry. Thank you for your consideration, and I am happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Peoples. Are there any questions? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. We appreciate it. Next, we have Nancy Hillstrand in Kodiak.
Yes, hello. My name is Nancy Hillstrand, and I'm with Pioneer Alaskan Fisheries. And we're a processing business that helped start the oyster farms in Ketchikan Bay. We built a oyster cooler and tried to assist them to get started. I, like the last caller, am very concerned about the large sized oyster farms. And I am definitely wanting to help the small Alaska-based businesses, as the sponsor says, but I'm very concerned also for the affected stakeholders. We've seen some problems in Ketchikan Bay when people want to expand or new people come in, because there's people that live out in these remote areas, and this would mean that they, well, I'm glad to hear Sarah, Ms. Vance, or Representative Vance bring up the fact that we could at least have public comment. That's great. But the thing is this is a, these are in navigable waters, and if you look at the National Fisherman issue of April, you'll see that there's a big full-page ad on a problem on the East Coast with the fishermen with these larger aquaculture, mariculture businesses. So please, what is the definition of small? What is the magnitude where these things, like the last person spoke of, how big do we want to get these, and where is that break off? It's got to be for the small businesses, as the sponsor, I believe, was trying to help. And, you know, some of these proposed operations are now 150 acres or more, and that is a blanket over our navigable waters. And we need to get a cap on this or figure out what is the density within regions, you know, how much do we want in each little bay. So please look at all these things. The notification system is archaic. So people don't even know when they're going to have, all of a sudden, an oyster farm will appear in their area, and they really don't even know that it, you know, was up for getting a permit for. So unforeseen issues arise and become evident after initial permits are required. So I believe the renewal process needs to be very strong so that people can voice their concerns and the affected stakeholders have a voice in this thing. So thank you very kindly. I appreciate you taking this on, and I, again, really feel it's important to define what small means and help the small Alaska-based businesses, because they're very, oyster farming can be noisy with a lot of added traffic, and so it's really important that we protect the common good, which is the waters of the state of Alaska. So thank you very kindly. I appreciate it.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Hillstrand. are there questions? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious, you were just, last two callers were talking about, some concerns about the size. I heard you say something about 150 acres. Did you have a particular sort of size restriction or density restriction you had in mind, just to kind of give a sense of, like, what that limit in your mind is and where the concern is drawn?
Well, when, you know, like in Ketchumak Bay, 34% of all the oysters in Alaska come out of Ketchumak Bay, yet there's pressure to put more and more and more. And so when is enough, you know, and how large should they be? Well, like some of these callers are saying they have half an acre. I think some of them are maybe an acre, but that's a large size in the middle of navigable waters. So I guess that's something that maybe the oyster farmers, you can see how large they all are. And I know one came up in Ketchumak Bay to enlarge it to 10 acres, and I think they had probably 50 comments go in saying, oh, my gosh, please don't do this to our bay, because it pretty much closes off the bay. And so I would say 10 acres is huge, but 150 is gigantic, you know, and so like in this article I just was reading in National Fisherman, they were talking about a 40-acre farm, and they're all up at arms at that. So I guess that's, you folks are the, you know, within DNR and shareholders and stakeholders, maybe that's something that we need to figure out, because I think we forget about that, the scale and magnitude of what we're doing here, and then all of a sudden we're stuck with, you know, these great big farms that start causing a big controversy in the state, in the common areas of the state of Alaska, which is the waters, of course. So I'd say 2 acres is small. 3, I don't know. Margo is probably online. Maybe she would know better on that. I'm afraid I can't tell you exactly, because this is just new. We're just starting in this, so we need to be very careful and to not make mistakes here in the early part, so that we can prevent problems and controversies.
Thank you. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as I understand it, with this bill, you know, this is the step after the initial tideland lease has been issued by the department. So to address your concern, I think that process should still allow for, a rigorous review and public comment. So I guess I'm just hoping that, because that part of the process, as I understand it, is not being changed. So I'm hoping that is the place where you could address your concerns, so that there wouldn't be, you know, a lease that was being renewed that would be of the size or, production level that became too too much for that particular area, or, you know, felt like it was going to overwhelm the area like you're describing. So I just want to kind of clarify that, because I think the first part of it is not being changed, and hopefully that strong process should prevent what the, you know, the callers are saying and their concerns, so that when it's a renewal, it's something that the local community has already weighed in on and feels supportive of.
Thank you. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just, ma'am, Ms. Holmstrom, I was just reading over the aquatic farm application review flow chart, and it states that with these leases, it has to go through a 10-year term, and it'll be looked at. And it's fairly extensive, I think, what they look at. So concerns that there may be growing too large or something, don't you think it'd be addressed by having this checked every 10 years? They'd have to go back and look and see how the operations are going, if the waters are staying clean and things like that. I know that it's also been mentioned to go to 20 years, but they're starting out with 10 years. I think that that's practical. Your opinions on that?
Yeah, I think so, and I think that allows people to be able to have the opportunity to see what did happen during that time and voice their concerns. Because, it, you know, things happen during the year, and all of a sudden you realize there's power washers running, you know, all day long, or, you know, when they're cleaning their gear, and you're living nearby, you've put a lot of money into your home, and all of a sudden you're stuck. You didn't realize that it's going to be very loud and a lot of traffic, you know, boat traffic and things like that. So that's why I'm really concerned, just because I've dealt with a lot of the people and seen some of these problems that have happened, and I just think it's, you know, that's where in 10 years, that's still a long time, but at least if you have an opportunity there, it's not a whole generation, which would be about 20 years. So you'd have a whole generation, and you'd probably want to move. It'd probably make people move, right? So anyway, it's really important, because we've done this in the past where we've not looked at the magnitude of what we're doing, and then all of a sudden things grow out of control, and we can't get them under control, you know, and so maybe we can try to keep this for the small Alaskan businesses and for the local communities, and and not just let this become something that's a great big huge international sales where the state of Alaska is not really making any money on this. I don't even know how much the state of Alaska is going to make on this anyway, but thank you very much. And I think it's 10 years is more than enough time, and I think then we need to have it opened up again so people can look at what's going on in case there's any problems.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think that that's a practical, you know, and it addresses those concerns there. But I also think you'd need at least 10 years for a company to be able to establish itself before they're put under the microscope and have to go through this. You know, 10 years gives them enough to be able to establish themselves, to see if they're a viable business, to go through the permitting, to see if they're – I think that that's a good plan. I think that the proposal is accurate that way. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Vance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have some questions for DNR about the permitting process.
Okay, let's see who we have here for DNR. We have Christy Coles. Christy?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, thank you. I have questions about the renewal. If a farm wanted to expand their size after the 10 years, would they start with a new application, or would this be a part of the renewal application?
Representative Vance, through the chair. So yes, they would, if they want to expand their size at any time during their operation, they would have to reapply, and that application would go back out for public notice. So it's not an automatic. We have one that I think you heard about in Kachemak Bay that wanted to expand in size. That one is currently going through the public notice process.
Follow up,
Representative Vance.
Are there currently any limitations on the size and scope of a farm in the permitting process?
Representative Vance, through the chair, yes. In regulation, we actually do have some requirements that it should not take up more than a third of a bite or a bay. So we do look at that on where the placement of these leases are going to be located. That is regulation. And then we also work closely with NOAA and Fish and Game on where a site might be located to see if it has any kind of complications it might cause for navigation or marine mammals.
Follow up.
Representative Vance.
Do you have any recommendations to address the concerns about larger corporations coming in on it, you know, trying to take up extensive acreage, on how we might be able to ease some of this concern.
Representative Vance, the chair, you know, that's a good question. These new farms at this magnitude and size are new to the state, as you've heard. So we haven't had much of a chance to really think about how we could address those. Usually they're located in areas that are much larger, that don't have, that aren't in a bay or a bight that might cause navigation issues. You know, if we had some sort of size restriction to say that it's over a certain size, it has to be go through the full process. But I'm unsure. I don't have any clear answers to your question.
Thank you.
Thank you. So if I'm understanding you correctly, Ms. Coles, there really isn't a size limitation, because if it's a huge bay, it could take up no more than one-third of the bay, correct?
Correct.
Thank you. Okay, so we will continue on with our public testimony, and next we will go to Marcos Scheer in Craig. Marcos, if you would identify yourself and your affiliation for the record.
Yes, Madam Chair. My name is Marco Scheer. I am the CEO of Premium Aquatics. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Premium Aquatics has a site south of Craig that is 127 acres for kelp and shellfish mariculture. We are going to express our support for HB 116. I think that it is a good step in the right direction, because for a number of reasons. One, that as was expressed earlier about the concept of the kind of capital that you need to put in and the grow out times that are necessary for activities like this. You know, getting a commitment to that kind of capital on a 10-year lease is materially increases the risk to potential investors, and so longer lease terms provide more opportunity to get an operation up and running, particularly if you're doing some of the longer live shellfish species like geoduck that may take 7 to 9 years to reach market size. You've got to carry that capital and labor cost until that that product reaches market size. I should have added at the beginning, I also sit on the board of the Alaska Fishery Development Foundation and Southeast Conference, but in this particular context, I'm testifying on behalf of Premium Aquatics. Let me speak to a couple of comments that were made earlier about the lease cost. One was that you only pay for the idea that you only pay for the lease area you're using. That is incorrect. You pay the lease fee for the whole area, whether or not you use it or not. There is a revenue production requirement that by year five, you're not producing the minimum amount of revenue on an annual basis, and then you will lose your lease. So the regulation already provides for an avenue that if you're not using something, you'll lose the lease. I'd also like to speak to the size component of it. The idea that these sites are large is actually, I don't think, an accurate assessment of them. For example, I think Taylor Shellfish farms on the West Coast 17,000 acres. So when we're talking about this, about the scale of perhaps my operation, which is actually only 25 acres of it, is allocated to shellfish, which is similar to what other farms are, and the rest is to kelp production. And you can only produce so much kelp on a particular acreage. And in a global marketplace where the world production of kelp is some 30 million tons, To be relevant to match, you've got to have some space to be able to do that production. So I think it's important to recognize, while this is a new transition for Alaska, the relative scale of what we're doing here is modest at best. And I think we need to put that in perspective as we look at this.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we're kind of in a time crunch here. So if I could ask you to sum it up, I'd be very grateful if you'd do that.
Of course. I just offer my support to House Bill 116, and if you had any questions about capital or other components that were addressed earlier, I'm happy to address them.
Thank you. Thank you kindly. Are there any questions? Seeing none, we appreciate you taking your time to testify, and I appreciate you wrapping it up quickly. Is there anyone here in the room that would like to testify? Seeing none, I'll close public testimony. And with that, do we have any questions from the committee for the sponsor of this bill? Would the sponsor, Representative Newman?
For the sponsor.
Quickly.
Welcome, Representative. My question is just in the title change with the Act Renewal Extension, Aquatic Farming, Aquatic Plant, Shellfish Hatchery Operations from Aquatic Farm and Hatchery Sites. Again, could you explain why the differences were included in the title?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, to make more clarity, we had some questions about the original title with hatcheries. People were wondering if it was salmon hatcheries, and we wanted to make it clear that it was aquatic and not salmon.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Would you like any? Oh, question, Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make sure that I was understanding it correctly, because some of those concerns that got brought up, it seems like that public process, and then Representative Vance asked, there would be, there was an expansion that would fall outside this renewal, there'd be another public process. So it seems to me that those would allow for opportunities for any concerns to be raised and that type of thing. So am I understanding that correctly? I just want to make sure.
Greg Smith, staff to Representative Story, Representative Tarr through the chair. Try this again. There, in terms of the initial lease, the granting of the initial lease, there is and DNR could probably speak a little bit more in depth about what's required. My understanding is on that initial lease, they do send out postcards to neighbors. I'm not sure if it's publicly posted in the newspaper, but it's very broad in that they reach out heavily, and it does take a lot of time. They have to respond to every question, every comment. Upon renewal, currently, again, in the process that we're seeking to align the renewal process for aquatic farm and related hatchery leases, it is publicly noticed. There is a grievance process. My understanding, if someone is personally affected, but it is not as broad, time consuming, and the notice isn't as great. But then, like I believe you mentioned, if they are proposing a change of footprint or size, that would require that they would apply as I believe a new lease or undergo that more that much more broader and involved public process.
Thank you.
Seeing no other questions,
do you have any final short comments?
Thank you for hearing the bill. I think this would be an advantage to streamline the renewal process and help this business grow. Thank you.
Thank you. And as is our policy, most of the time we will set this bill aside. Once in a while we make an exception. And if anyone has any proposed amendments, they need to be to my office by 1 p.m. tomorrow, and then we will take this bill up again. Okay, thank you, and thank you for your presentation. And up next, we will hear House Resolution 8, International Year of the Salmon, by Representative Tarr. And here to present the bill, we have the sponsor staff, Thatcher Brower. Mr. Brower, please come forward, identify yourself and your affiliation for the record. And I just want to make note, we have a couple of legislators from out of state that will be calling in. And so if we have to make an interruption, bear with us, please. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Thatcher Brower, and I'm staff to Representative Garen Tarr. With your permission, I'll give a brief introduction to House Resolution 8, describe the International Year of the Salmon, and the collaborative work we have done with other states on this resolution. House Resolution 8 recognizes 2019 as the International Year of the Salmon and supports an associated global initiative identifying the importance of wild salmon. The International Year of the Salmon is a project launched by the North Pacific and Admiral's Fish Commission and the North Atlantic Salmon Conservation Organization. I first learned about the International Year of the Salmon at an event early this year in Juneau. Since then, I've continued to hear about the research and outreach that is going on as part of this global initiative. One of the more exciting research projects that has grown from the International Year of the Salmon is a first-of-its-kind scientific expedition in the Gulf of Alaska, where 21 international scientists were on a five-week trip and are now analyzing the data collected. Among other projects, scientists are using DNA to identify stock-specific rearing areas of all five species of salmon and determine their abundance and condition. Those who are collaborating on this research hope this project will occur annually going forward. Other projects associated with the initiative include, but by no means are limited to, dam removal in Maine and cleanup projects in Northern Ireland. The International Year of the Salmon theme is salmon and people in a changing world. Supporting the passage of House Resolution 8 is one way the state of Alaska can recognize the importance of salmon to our state and around the world and encourage greater research of salmon and the factors that impact their survival. Recognizing that salmon are a shared resource along the West Coast, House Resolution 8 was introduced in conjunction with measures in Washington and Oregon. You'll later hear from representatives in both of these states that we worked with. The health of salmon populations across the Northern Hemisphere vary, but even the strongest salmon populations face threats from both humans and changing environment. Scientists still have a lot to learn about salmon life cycles, impacts of a warming climate, and increased development. All along the West Coast, strong subsistence, sport, and commercial fisheries are critically important to both the culture and the economy. Now, though, a number of those salmon runs are struggling, making it more important than ever that we work collaboratively to do the research needed to ensure salmon are here for generations to come. Up and down the West Coast and across the Northern Hemisphere, salmon have sustained humans and been celebrated since the beginning of time. By passing House Resolution 8, the legislature will acknowledge that 2019 is International Year of the Salmon and bring attention to the research and events in conjunction with this global initiative. And that concludes my introduction of this resolution. I'd be happy to answer any questions, Madam Chair.
Do we have any questions? Thank you, Mr. Brower.
Thank you.
We have several people that are invited testimony, and we will start with Tyson Flick. Mr. Flick, if you would join us. Identify yourself and your affiliation for the record. And please, again, I'm going to say, if our callers call in, I may be so bold as to have to interrupt you.
Absolutely. For the record, my name is Tyson Fick, F-I-C-K. I am currently a commercial fisherman. I have been a sport fisherman, sport fishing guide. I've lived on the Kuskokwim and participated in subsistence fisheries, and can say most definitely that for me, salmon is life, and every year is the International Year of the Salmon as far as I'm concerned. But I do appreciate this opportunity for us to get together and celebrate something that hopefully we all agree on. People always ask me, if I spent time working in the Capitol and worked with many of you in the past, why can't they just get along? It's like, well, you know, this is the place where we go to argue about policies and what to do and how to address those things. But hopefully this one thing, this little resolution that, you know, says that You know, we like salmon and we like science and we hope to learn from other places in the world. I feel like salmon is one thing where there's more that unites us than divides us, even though the news plays it out more often that it's who gets to catch the salmon or how we're going to handle habitat issues. I think we all agree that we like salmon. We like knowing that this is the state that has them. We like eating them, like looking at them. And, you know, what we've learned from other places that have lost salmon in their efforts to revive them all over the world. They're gone from Europe, mostly. They're mostly gone from the East Coast to the United States. And when we talk about bringing back salmon, we talk about tens of fish. Not tens of millions like we get to talk about here. Hundreds of millions. And so there's a real opportunity in Alaska to celebrate that and continue our leadership. We've been leaders on fisheries management from the time this was a state. My time at ASME, I got to travel around the world and share with people the amazing story of our fisheries management when in 1959 we put the ideal of sustainable management into the Constitution. I feel like, you know, now we're at a real important time when we talk about how we handle the other uses that we have in the state. And we've largely solved the overfishing issue in the United States because we've followed Alaska's lead, and there's a lot to build on. So I urge your support of this resolution and to be part of a collaborative effort, multi-state, multi-country, to share what we've learned and learn from others on this, the year of the salmon. Thank you, and I'll, of course, take any questions.
Thank you. Do we have any questions? Representative Christ Tompkins.
What's your present affiliation, Mr. Fick? I might have missed it.
Skipper of the fishing vessel Heather Ann and owner of Taku River Reds.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Aaron Harrington. Hi, Aaron. If you'd state your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Erin Harrington. I am the executive director of the Salmon Project, as well as a member of a Bristol Bay salmon fishing household. I am here today just to speak in support of House Resolution 8. I have a little bit of perspective from having already done some work with Mark Saunders, who's in charge of the International Year of the Salmon. I think you'll be hearing from him in a bit. But I'm part of a larger collective called Salmon Connect that's been working to have conversations about salmon and the ways that it connects with people's lives in the state for a couple of years. And some of my colleagues from Salmon Connect have actually already had the opportunity to travel to the lower 48, to Oregon and Washington, to learn about some of the things that have happened in those states. Tyson alluded to the loss that they've experienced, so I won't belabor that, but my colleagues from Alaska found their trip down south to be extremely instructive, and I think that really speaks to the value of this kind of cross-jurisdictional communication, collaboration, learning from one another. In addition, in Alaska, we are fortunate to still have people who are extremely connected to salmon, and it's not just as a token thing. People in Seattle love salmon, but they love it as a memory. In Alaska, it's still part of our daily lives, annual lives, seasonal lives. And that unique set of connections is something that we are able to bring to our international partners and our cross-jurisdictional partners to show them what it is to have lives that are still truly connected to salmon. In our work at the Salmon Project, we've done a significant amount of statewide research, and we've learned that 3 out of 4 Alaskans consider themselves to be personally connected to salmon. 9 out of 10 Alaskans view salmon as an important Alaskan value. And this crosses political stripe, this crosses socioeconomics, this crosses region. This is something that's shared by the vast majority of Alaskans, kind of regardless of the kinds of Thanksgiving table conversations they may have about politics. We have come to believe that this is foundational in our state. And it isn't just about this resource, but it's a medium through which people talk about the values they have for their families and the aspirations that they have for their children, and also the way that they want to live on the landscape as Alaskans and value that. So I cannot speak strongly enough to the import of maintaining a robust salmon-connected way of life in Alaska, and I think that this resolution is something that can further our adventure on that path. So thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and I'm happy to take questions.
Thank you. Do we have any questions for Ms. Harrington?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just love that you said the salmon-connected way of life. I think we should start using that phrase more.
Good. I'm glad to hear that it works for you. It works well for us through the chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Harrington.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Next up, we have Ms. Weitz, Jill Weitz from, she is the director of Salmon Beyond Borders. Hello.
Whenever you want to play it. All right.
Matt's and again, I'm going to say that I may find myself in a position where I have to interrupt you, and if I do, just bear with us.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the House Fisheries Committee. My name is Jill Weitz, and I am the director of the Salmon Beyond Borders campaign here in Juneau. Next week, I think I will have the honor of providing you all with a bit more of a detailed update on the transboundary issue. But today I'm excited to be here to offer a bit more of a subjective perspective, one that is rooted in my constant learning of how salmon connect us, as we've heard today, and on a global scale, but primarily here in Southeast Alaska, how salmon connect us to the ancient Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian peoples of this land. Today I'm here to speak in support of the Global Initiative to build resilience for salmon and people and celebrate with you the International Year of the Salmon. The effort to defend and sustain the salmon of the transboundary Taku, Stikine, and Unik rivers has united nearly every sector of Southeast Alaska. Salmon Beyond Borders partners with local Alaska businesses, each commercial fishing gear group, sport fishermen, tour operators, and lawmakers, and we work in close coordination with tribes and First Nations in British Columbia. These three rivers originate in Northwest BC and flow into Southeast Alaska. They have served as centers of culture for centuries and as the lifeblood of the largest salmon-producing rivers in this region. Did you know that these rivers produce 80% of our king salmon? If not, hopefully you'll learn more next week. The Salmon Is video you're about to see is a product of a Salmon Beyond Borders tour through Northwest British Columbia during the harvest season of 2018. Our takeaways? Each community is different. Each tradition is different. But everyone has a salmon story. And everyone's auntie is the best at smoking salmon. This video was first shown at the IYS launch event in Vancouver in October of 2018. The event was attended by 150 representatives of the salmon community in the Pacific and the Atlantic basins, Indigenous and non-Indigenous leaders from Canada, the United States, Russia, Korea, and Japan demonstrated support for IYS. Are you ready to interrupt?
Yes,
go
I am
for
ready
it
to interrupt you. If I could, I see that we do online have Ms. Deborah Lekanoff from the Washington State Legislature. She's a representative from House District 40. In Washington. Ms. Lekanoff?
Hi, this is Deborah Lekanoff, your Washington State Representative.
Wonderful. If you would begin, please.
Yes, it's an honor to be here serving the great state of Washington and providing our voice in protecting and restoring the salmon in partnership with Alaska and Oregon. On behalf of Washington State, we are pleased to share that we have introduced a bill and we will continue to engage with our neighbors to the north, my beloved Alaska, and to the south in Oregon to ensure that we have salmon today and for generations to come. I'll pause, ma'am, and let me just introduce myself appropriately. I'm a Tlingit woman from Yakutat, Alaska, who has been living in Washington State for 20 years. I have returned back to Yakutat to provide economic development and any type of governmental training back to my community. As a Native American woman, we always give back to the future who will come and be our next leaders of tomorrow and to our past who have built this road for us today. I am of the Raven Moiti. I am of the Dog Salmon and the Owl Clan. My Tlingit name is Hiktsisi. It is meaning of the springtime frogs and a time of change. My houses and name reflect my values. and the laws that I live by. They guide my decision making as a mom and as a lawmaker. Once the salmon are gone, as we know it, not only do I face losing the very spirit that guides me, but we as lawmakers face the impact to our rural workforces, economies, and quality of life, as we know it in Alaska, Washington, and Oregon. So to finish up my testimony today to the great committee there in the great state of Alaska, as you can tell I'm a little biased to my fellow Alaskans, it is a great accomplishment for us to stand together to celebrate the International Year of the Salmon and to join organizations around the world who've committed to working in collaboration on salmon research and outreach around the theme of salmon and people in the changing world. We in Washington State applaud the partnership between our three states and with the Pacific, North Pacific Autonomous, and I say that, I butchered that name, Fish Commission, and the North Atlantic Salmon Conservation Organization. In the state of Washington, we face the reality that our waters, habitat, and resources are deeply impacted from 150 years of living in a pollution-based economy. Here is our truth in Washington State. We know that there is only one river in the lower 48 that produces all six species of wild salmon, and that is the Skagit River, located in the 40th District. Only one river. It is our time to stand together to support our common science, policies, and laws to address the restoration and protection of salmon. Long before Washington was the Apple State, we were always known as the Salmon State, and we in Washington are honored and pleased to stand with Alaska and Oregon in sustaining one of the most honored resources to all of our economies, our cultures, and our quality of life. So thank you, ma'am, for taking my testimony today, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Do we have any questions? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say thank you, Representative Lekanoff, so much for the collaboration with our office, and we look forward to continuing to work with you. Thank you for calling in today.
And Representative Lekanoff, I just want to say that I have the great honor of being the representative to your hometown of Yakutat.
Thank you so much. I was just at home, and I was just at home a few weeks ago. We have lost a wonderful uncle of mine, Lowell Peterson. It is his time to be hanging his net and getting ready to go fishing to make sure his smokehouse is full, his grandchildren have fish, and it is with his name today that I'm honored to be able to serve my commitment to working with you all.
Yes, I knew your uncle well, and I was sorry to hear that as well. And we certainly appreciate you taking your time to testify before our committee today. Thank you, kindly.
Thank you.
No
have a good day.
Questions? Thank you. Ms. Weitz, thank you for the...
This video can do more than I'll say, so we're just going to roll with it.
So think of a salmon. Do it now. Close your eyes. Think of a salmon.
Well, the first thing that came with salmon is life.
There's a lot of things, but the first thing I think is salmon is life.
Well, I would say salmon is a way of life.
Salmon is life.
Salmon is the continuity of life and the lifeblood of the Pacific Northwest.
Salmon is life. Everything to us.
I can't say it any better than she did. Salmon is life.
Salmon is good to eat.
yeah, I can't say much better than that, other than those remarks were unprompted. That happened to be the common remark from each person interviewed. And I will just wrap up by saying that I have the honor to work with people throughout this great region on an international salmon issue, and it requires collaboration. And I'm really excited to be here today on behalf of Salmon Beyond Borders to work and honor and celebrate a symbol of resilience, a symbol of complete function, and a symbol of Alaska. Salmon Beyond Borders thanks the members of the committee and Representative Garen Tarr for introducing this resolution. We support this resolution and the efforts to better establish salmon management and policies in Alaska and throughout the British Columbia region that are rooted in sound science and information. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Newman, if you could hold your question. We have our last legislator online, so I would appreciate that. Online, we have Ken Helm from the Oregon State Legislature. He represents House District Number 34. Representative Helm?
Yes, good afternoon, Madam Chair.
We're almost afternoon. We're getting close. If you would identify yourself and your affiliation for our records, please.
Yes, thank you. This is Representative Ken Helm from the Oregon Legislature. I represent House District 34, I'm sorry.
And you can begin your testimony if you would, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to both support the current resolution in your committee. I'm very happy to be working with Representative Tarr and Representative Lekanoff in a multi-state effort to raise the awareness about wild salmon. My only report is that here in Oregon, we have a very similar resolution before our chambers, House Concurrent Resolution 35. The language is very, very similar to the one before you, and I'm happy to report that 41 of my colleagues, House and Senate colleagues, have already signed on to the resolution. There's a lot of enthusiasm in Oregon for giving more attention to our wild salmon stocks and the rivers that they live in and the habitat that those rivers flow through. As with Alaska and Washington, Oregon has a great history and heritage of both commercial salmon harvests, tribal harvests, and sport fishing. And we face the same challenges that Alaska and Washington does as well, in that over time, our wild salmon stocks have gone into decline, and despite some of our best efforts, they continue to do so. There are a couple of bright spots for us in a couple of our river systems where we've left the river system alone for long enough to allow wild salmon to regenerate themselves, and those are big successes. So I will conclude my comments there, Madam Chair. I applaud the efforts of the advocates of these resolutions in all three states. I'm very proud to be part of the effort, and I look forward to ongoing work in collaboration around the protection and promotion of wild salmon. Thank you.
Thank you kindly, Representative Helm. Do we have any questions? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Helm, I just wanted to thank you for the collaboration and for calling in today. And I think as we hear these comments, it's just a reminder that the political boundaries do not mean a lot to our wild salmon, and I think it's becoming increasingly more important that we're collaborating, and so I hope this is just the beginning of those collaborations, but thank you very much for being with us today.
You're quite welcome. Thank you for being a champion in your state on these issues.
Representative Helm, we appreciate you taking the time to call into our committee today.
Okay, very good. Thank you, committee members and Madam Chair. Bye-bye.
Well, Ms. Weitz, you batted 1,000. You got both interruptions. Back to you.
All good.
Representative Newman, I believe, had a question.
Yeah, thank you for that. that movie about the little video there on salmon is life, because it kind of spurred some of my thoughts on this issue and the resolution and my desire to continue to work with Representative Tarr on this. Because what it doesn't mention in the resolution is areas of salmon that are stressed. You know, in the Mat-Su region alone, when you look at the size of Alaska and all the streams that have salmon in them, 8 of 12 recognized stocks of concern, listed stocks of concern, are in the Mat-Su. This is sitting in Yetna drainage.
Wow.
You know, there was lodges up and down those rivers that, you know, catered to people in the sport fishing and tourism industry that are gone now because the fish are gone. And it's because these areas are stressed. And again, I'd like to work with the representative to maybe put something in here, maybe a few of your thoughts on that is whereas, you know, this commission would work to identify areas of, you know, that have stocks of concern or stressed areas, to identify those first. Because that's where it's needed. You know, and when I look at the resolution too, it talks about Alaska Natives, but I know my family depends, and we were talking about how many people depend on this. I know my family depends on salmon.
Absolutely.
You know, and there's lots of folks that are subsistence fishermen in my area. You know, we go down to Kenai now when we can, or I just try and get my salmon other ways anymore. But the bottom line, Madam Chair, is to be able to identify areas, you know, that are concerns for all of us, and I think in stocks of concern are that. And I think this resolution would be fine, and maybe your comments on that, and maybe Representative Tarr, I can continue to work with her on that, because I think it is a very important issue.
Thank you.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Newman, thank you for those comments, and I totally agree. I think the beautiful thing about this resolution is that it is an opportunity for us to really hone in on those priority areas throughout our state that are productive once we're productive, and we want to ensure that productivity remains. So I'm fully in support of working with Representative Tarr to address those concerns and incorporate them into some of the resolution language for sure.
Thank you. And thank you for your presentation, Ms.
Thank White. You.
We'll see you next week.
You will. Thank you so much.
And next up, we have Mark Saunders from North Pacific Anadromous Fish Commission in Seattle. Mr. Saunders?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair and members of the Alaska House Fisheries Committee. I'm Mark Saunders with the North Pacific Anadromous Fish Commission. I know anadromous causes grief in a name. But we know a lot of scientists, you end up with names like that in your organization's title. Our organization has been around for 26 years, established by treaty between Canada, United States, Japan, Korea, and Russia. And it was initially started to stop and enforce the stoppage of the high sea drift net fishery. It has a larger mandate around conservation of salmon in the high seas conservation in the adjacent waters. I am really honored to be here today to be able to address your committee, and I thank Representative Tarr and Bill Weiss and others. I had the good fortune to be in Alaska and Anchorage to meet with the Salmon Connect group, and have a long history of working with colleagues in Alaska. We also, as part of our commission, have representatives of Alaska Department of Fish and Game working very closely with us on salmon science and the International Year of the Salmon in general. I think I heard a lot of the connecting sort of issues that, you know, the climb from the south as we're losing salmon north, and Alaska being fortunate to be a stronghold and wanting to sustain that, but dealing at the same time with big changes that we're seeing, surprises, declines of Chinook salmon, declines in pinks, and dealing with the warm blob and surprises that are coming. Alaska is not alone in this, and our office is Canadian. Our office is in Vancouver, British Columbia, and I've had the good fortune of being right around the globe over the last number of years in the Northern Hemisphere, and the conversations are unique to each area, but a lot of the issues that we're dealing with are the same. The decline that started in the marine systems in the early to mid-90s, and it happened, it started to happen at the same time in the Atlantic. And we heard earlier from one of the speakers, you know, about the issues and how extreme the situation is in the Atlantic. But it's not a coincidence that it's happened in the early 90s, started to happen in the early 90s. And despite that big signal, we still don't have the scientists working together in a way that they can start to understand that and put the clues together. And the IYS is actually, this is the focal year, the year of the salmon, but the initiative itself will go on for through 2022. And the idea is by 2022 is that we've made the connection, the kind that you're making today and hearing from representatives from Oregon and Washington. And we would hope that that runs deeper and that we build shared ability within science and within our social and our regulatory bodies, that we get connected where we can learn from each other, because you're doing things in Alaska that the rest of the hemisphere needs to understand what you've done in Alaska. The Salmon Connect, Alaska, the management of ABFNG, those stories need to be shared across the hemisphere. You need to be able to work with organizations that are working on these bigger problems of the impact of climate on freshwater, but coastal and high seas. Right across those life histories, we're working on projects to link people. And I think Alaska's got a lot to be able to learn from other parts of the world, but has a big story to tell. And so I'm looking forward to, through 2022, to use this year as a call to action, engage Alaskans, continue to engage them and sort of bring them on, in this initiative. And I think we've got, a tremendous amount to gain by collaborating and working together. So we're also in the middle of sort of raising both governments and found money through private foundations in the order of tens of millions to facilitate this work that we're trying to take on across the hemisphere. So I look forward to working with Representative Tara further, and of course Jill and others that are part of this initiative across the hemisphere. So I'd like to say that I fully support, of course, the passage of the IYS resolution. Thank you for your support and work to the betterment of salmon and people. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Saunders. Do we have questions for Mr. Saunders?
Just a comment.
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's just really exciting to hear about the collaboration that you're doing. I'm glad to hear it's going to be going on for a couple more years. And I think just based on what we're learning about migration patterns and just some of the pressures out in the ocean and how, you know, we're worried about it when the fish are coming back to Alaska, but there, you know, this whole other management regime we have to be thinking about, and so I just really look forward to the work that you're doing, and I hope that we all just strengthen the relationships we have and working on protecting our wild salmon populations.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions, Mr. Saunders, we thank you for taking your time to testify before this committee. Next, we will
thank
go to
much,
Doug Meekum, who is the Deputy Regional Administrator for Alaska Region in NOAA Fisheries. He is calling from Arizona. Mr. Meekum.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Good morning.
Just perfectly.
My name is Doug Meekum. I want to thank the House Fisheries Committee for the opportunity to speak in support of H.R. 8, sponsored by Representative Tarr. It recognizes 2019 as the International Year of the Salmon and supports the Associated Global Research and Outreach Initiative. Since 2005, I served as the Deputy Regional Administrator for NOAA Fisheries in Juneau. Before coming to NOAA, I worked for ABFNG for 22 years in research and management. From 99 to 2005, I was the Director of Commercial Fisheries for ABFNG, and I received my MS in Fisheries from UAF in 1984. Since 2005, I've served as the head of the U.S. delegation to the North Pacific Anadromous Fish Commission, and I'm a member of the steering committee for the IYS. NOAA Fisheries supports and is participating in the coordinated development of the IYS initiative sponsored by MPASC and NASCO.
All participants are muted.
Oops.
the Alaska marine life. The Alaska salmon fishery plays an integral role in the world's salmon production, and the Alaska salmon fishery, capably managed by ADF&G, is the most viable commercial fishery in the United States. Sustaining Alaska's wild salmon populations is essential to preserving salmon cultures that have existed for thousands of years. The overall theme of the IYS is salmon and people in a changing world. The extraordinary life histories of salmon expose them to many environmental and anthropogenic factors influencing their health and abundance. The IYS seeks to raise awareness of what humans can do to better ensure salmon and their varied habitats are conserved and restored. The IYS envisions an expansion of salmon research efforts on the high seas and near shore waters, as well as a full year of education, outreach, and public engagement. The IYS provides a platform for advancing our understanding of the species, but also for promoting conservation, restoration, community support, and ocean literacy. In addition, the IYS provides NOAA an opportunity to highlight our species in the spotlight and habitat focus area programs. In closing, salmon affect more people culturally, economically, and recreationally than any other fish species. Understanding how a changing climate may influence their ocean and freshwater habitats, distributions, and productivity is an increasingly important concern to management agencies, the fishing industry, tribes, recreational users, and the general public. NOAA Fisheries greatly appreciates your support of this resolution and the increased awareness, support, and engagement that it will provide. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak in support of HR8. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Meekham. Do we have any Representative Tarr?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wanted to thank you for that really good testimony and just this extensive knowledge you have from your work at Alaska Department of Fish and Game and now at NOAA. I just hope you'll keep in touch with us, because one thing I would love to learn a little bit more about and think about things we could work on is just what kind of barriers are there for multi-state collaboration and international collaboration as it relates to research projects, and, you know, are there things that we could be doing at the state level to help better integrate some of those efforts and maximize, you know, we have limited resources financially at this time, and, you know, that doesn't make us unique from a lot of other places, and so how could we work together a little bit more so that we're really complementary in the research projects that we're doing and remove any unnecessary barriers to collaboration?
Well, if I could just briefly say thank you again for your work on this. I think what you're doing is helpful for sure. Any expressions of support, especially a resolution such as this, which is sponsored by other partners in the Pacific Northwest, is a way for us to convince others to continue to try to continue to support the development of this. It's not all rainbows and unicorns when you're talking about funding initiatives like this, and international collaboration is very difficult. Mm-hmm. Requires a lot of diplomacy and a lot of sustained effort. So doing what you're doing with respect to this resolution is very helpful, and I thank you for that.
Mm. Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Meekham. We appreciate you taking your time to testify before this committee. I see we have one more question from Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, sir, for your what you do here and your level of information that you have. So I have a specific question for you. Excuse me. On page 2, lines 27 and 28, it mentions the Endangered Species Act. But I know many people that I've talked to here in Alaska feel that the Marine Mammal Protection Act has had a devastating effect on management of Alaska's salmon. And many feel that that should be addressed and maybe changed into the Marine Mammal Management Act to be able to manage that because of damage from all the things that eat salmon. I'll just say that instead of going down the list. But they're all protected under the Marine Mammal Protection Act. Do you think that that should maybe be one of the clauses in here, should be part of the discussion on the management of this?
Well, I mean, that's obviously a decision that's up to you. I will say one thing about the Marine Mammal Protection Act that we administer. And, you know, one of the great success stories was getting the eastern population of Stellar Sea Lions off of the endangered species list. One of the first species that had been taken off of that list in a long, long time, and I've been a part of that effort. And one of the things that's allowed for is some of the lethal removals of sea lions down in the Columbia and places like that, where It's a big problem with some of those endangered species down there. Fortunately, we don't have any listed species of salmon in Alaska because we've taken care of a business up there. We protect the habitat. We have a good, strong management system. We have a public involvement in that whole process, and it's a model for the world over. So, but in places like that, it's habitat loss has led to some real problems, and predation by marine mammals is an issue. And so, you know, we try to administer that fairly and according to the law. And what if people think that there are portions of the law that should be changed, you know, they're obviously they can pursue those changes. But that's really more of a legislative policy call.
Thank you. Do we have any further questions? Again, I'd like to thank you for taking your time to testify before this committee.
Thank you.
And next, we have Chris. Oh, I see it's spelled wrong on here. That's the problem. If you would identify yourself and your affiliation for the record, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the House Fisheries Committee. My name is Chris Sargent. I'm a research scientist with the University of Montana, but based permanently here in Juneau. I appreciate the opportunity to convey my support for International Year of the Salmon and continued scientific research on these iconic group of fish. My work focuses on three salmon-rich transboundary rivers shared between Alaska and British Columbia, the Taku, Stikine, and Yunik. I'll be providing more specific information on these rivers next week during the House Fisheries hearing on transboundary watersheds, but speaking more broadly today, I'm generally interested in studying how our actions as humans modify freshwater habitat for salmon and affect their survival. I grew up on the shores of Puget Sound and worked the first half of my fisheries career in that region studying salmon. And although I watched in real time as Puget Sound and Columbia River populations dwindled, I was also heartened to see my friends and colleagues in the urban parts of Washington State recognize the value of salmon recovery. I feel really lucky to have worked here in Alaska the past 8 years and see so many thriving salmon populations. But as we all know and have mentioned today, some populations are showing signs of decline. So continued research toward better understanding what sustains our productive freshwater ecosystems is vital to ensuring our communities can continue to pursue a lifestyle fueled in large part by salmon. We're faced with an unprecedented opportunity here to preserve the sustainable fisheries we already have using science-based management. The march toward understanding salmon may feel like a slow plod, but the journey is worthy of our continued pursuit. In what might be considered the first salmon experiment described in writing, Isaac Walton's book, The Complete Angler, published way back in the good year 1653, describes how Atlantic salmon were marked with sewing thread as juvenile fish, and then observed returning to the same river as spawning adults, demonstrating the ability of salmon to accurately navigate back to their place of birth. Over 300 years later, in his influential book on Pacific salmon, Tom Quinn, who's a professor at the University of Washington, describes a group of sockeye salmon caught in a single purse seine set in the Gulf of Alaska, where all the fish were tagged and released back to the ocean. These individual sockeye, sharing space in one tiny speck of the ocean, eventually swam in wildly divergent directions across their range, some returning to rivers in British Columbia, like the Skeena and the Nass, and some returning to Alaska watersheds in places like Kodiak Island or Bristol Bay. But after almost four centuries, scientists still cannot definitively say how salmon returned to their home waters from a sprawling open ocean. And we are still not great at predicting when salmon runs will be strong or weak each year. But we can say one thing with certainty. If we leave enough salmon in the water to return to clean rivers with abundant spawning grounds, they will thrive for generations to come. I think the diversity of salmon caught from that purse seine set in the Gulf of Alaska holds some nice symbolism for the International Year of the Salmon. It takes a special kind of animal to continue holding our rapt attention for so many years. So thank you, committee. Your support of this resolution matters because it shows that Alaskans support science and wild salmon. Happy to answer any questions.
Do we have any questions for Mr. Sargent?
Just a thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Any other questions? I have a question. You mentioned you work for the University of Montana.
That's correct.
And you're stationed here?
I'm stationed here in Juneau, yep, focusing specifically on Alaska, British Columbia transboundary watersheds.
How lucky can a guy get?
That's what I thought.
Yes. Okay, thank you. Seeing no other questions, we really appreciate you coming and testifying.
Thank you.
Before this committee. I'm going to take just a brief recess. Do we have any final comments from the resolution's sponsor? Seeing done, and we have no final comments from the committee. Representative Tarr?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank my staffer, Thatcher, who has worked so hard on this and did such an awesome job in collaborating with these other states. It's doesn't happen all the time that we get to do that, but I think hopefully is just the beginning of more collaborations, and I want to thank him for making some smoked salmon dip. That's our own mini fisheries committee celebration of the International Year of the Salmon. So thank him, and then help yourself on the way out.
And with that, earlier I said there's usually an exception, and this is going to be it. We're going to move this from committee. Usually we have two hearings, and Representative Newman had some questions, but he's going to work with the sponsor of this resolution in the Resources Committee, so he feels comfortable. Consequently, I feel comfortable asking to move it from committee today if there are no objections. And with no objections, I would ask Representative Newman for a motion.
Again, thank you, Madam Chair. And again, thank you to work with this. I think we do have some issues that we need to talk about, and we can improve it and use our Fisheries Committee to do that. But with that, Madam Chair, I move out through HDR8LSO667-U out of committee with individual recommendation and attached fiscal notes.
And hearing no objection, we will move this from committee, and I would like to thank Representative Newman. And we will, if members would please stay to sign the documents. And with that, we will have fisheries this Thursday, April 25th at 10 a.m. This committee will be holding its second hearing on House Bill 116. Please have any amendments you might want to add to that to my office by 1 p.m. tomorrow, and discuss any changes you might want to make with the sponsor as well. We will also be having a public hearing and invited testimony on House Bill 65, fish tax repeal, and municipal refunds and revenue sharing. And with nothing else to come before this committee, we will adjourn at 10:47.